Radio Namaste is brought to you by your host, the blue collar goddess, Sarah Nash, and a small crew of guest personalities determined to amuse, entertain, and occasionally astonish you. And now, Radio Namaste, a different brand of enlightenment streaming live across this galaxy and probably a few more.
Oh, greetings, Earthlings and other listeners across the galaxy. If you're listening live, and, well, it's sort of sunny on this side of the Northern Hemisphere, the Pacific Northwestern portion of that hemisphere. This is Sarah Nash as your host, and you're listening to Radio Namaste on the Om Times Radio Network, bringing you enlightenment, the blue-collar goddess way. By the way, I have quite a few clients who are making the romance plunge, and I've sent them to the Om Times Dating Network, Ascending Hearts. So, go there if you're looking for some conscious love, but ask me for a bit of advice first, and you can do that if you hit me up on our Twitter. That's at Radio Namaste with the hashtag Blue Collar Goddess. And by the way, if you do that, not only will I respond to you, but you'll get the opportunity to be in the drawing for a free 1 hour Skype session. And our last winner was Alaya, Grandmother Alaya from, she's also another Om Times Radio Network host. So let's spread this out. Let's not be so nepotistic. I'm going to put all of those love notes in a hat. Zen Master Ted will snag one out, and Motorized Millie will announce the winner at the end of each month when she joins me as my guest host. So hashtag that blue collar goddess to at Radio Namaste and get in the hat for the goods. Those are the good goods. You already know that you don't have to download an app to get live streaming access to this conscious community called Om Times Radio, if you're listening live. But you're going to want to check out the archives for past shows at the Om Times Podbean portal or on Namaste, that's with an H, .com, in the show archive section. And Zen Master Ted is going to give you a tweet about that in a minute or two. So make sure you star that. Make it a favorite for easy access later. Right now, though, I have Todd Helt on the other line. He's a librarian and a writer who lives in Chicago with his wife and his two sons. He studies global warming, and we all know that's not really a real thing, but he's going to tell us why he thinks it is. But in political science and religion and literature and psychology and sociology and like a whole bunch of other ologies, I love this guy. He teaches classes on information literacy and the information landscape of global warming, which we all know is not really a real thing because it's just not. Well, anyways, he's been a friend. He's really been a friend for years. And well, I found him like eons ago when I read a piece of his poetry. And by the way, this guy writes amazing poetry. He really does. It should be Pulitzer winning poetry. I don't know. Todd, can you get a Pulitzer for poetry?
I've heard. It is rumored to happen. It's not happened to me yet.
Not yet. But, you know, we talked about global warming like months and months ago when I first told you that I was, you know, possibly doing a radio show when they asked me at the Om Times Radio Network to come on board with them. And you said, well, you should talk about global warming. And I put my, you know, Sunny Sparkle, I don't know, what is it called? Hippie long stocking voice. And I was like, oh my God, global warming. That's not really a thing. That's not a thing. And you were like, yeah, right. But library science and global warming, they're like weird. They don't seem like companions. You teach a class. How did that start?
Well, first, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for thanking me.
Well, okay, so I was at this educational assessment conference in Indianapolis back in 2008 or so, and the keynote speaker was talking about the importance of being authentic in the classroom and teaching about things that that you thought were important. And we're all nodding our heads. They said, okay, so how many of you understand the global warming? And we're all educators. We raised our hands. And he said, okay, and how many of you think it might be the most daunting challenge that civilization has ever faced? And all the hands stayed up. And he's like, okay, how many of you are teaching about that in your classrooms right now? And all the hands went down. And it stuck with me because I thought, you know, I've read quite a bit about this. I know a bit about it. And I could teach that. And around the same time, in my library, we were talking about how we wanted to have a semester-long class that would teach people all the library stuff, you know, how to find information from different sources, how to evaluate it, how to use it ethically. And plus, I think we were tired of seeing students looking for resources that would back up their opinions. You know, instead of learning the information first that could then inform their opinions, they wanted to say, well, my opinion is my opinion, and I want to find people who agree with me.
Well, you can do that on the internet. You can find opinions that will agree with you. You'll find opinions that, you know, it's like if you eat 20 carrots a day, it will cause cancer. If you don't eat 20 carrots a day, you know, you're going to die. So, I mean, there's statistics to back up the statistics.
And I better buy some carrots. and so, like, if you're a social scientist, you call that directional reasoning. That's that where you look for research that validates you, not that informs you. In a way, global warming is a really interesting case study for information literacy and how people seek out the information that they use to justify their worldviews. And, like, if you search for articles that will tell you that global warming is not happening, surprise, you're going to find articles that tell you that global warming isn't happening. And that makes you feel better about yourself because everyone loves to be right, but it doesn't really help you get closer to understanding the world. And, you know, this is all pretty well-documented stuff.
But aren't there laws, like, against deliberately distorting, like, the truth or the facts or things like that? We'll talk about that later, but go ahead.
Yeah, there are kind of. But it's even deeper than that, man. You know, cultural cognition, you know, shapes individuals' beliefs, like where you come from and who you are. And researchers have noted that it colors people's belief in whether or not there's a consensus among scientists that global warming is happening and what's causing it. And
there is also
political debates.
Exactly. But Bill Nye, the science guy, was on John Oliver tonight. A few months ago, and they had Bill Nye, the science guy, there, who is a huge proponent for, you know who I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Finally, he knows. It's like, have you seen The Librarians? No, I don't watch television, Sarah. Okay. but, you know, it was funny because John Oliver had Bill Nye, the science guy, there. And it was funny because Bill Nye often shows up on these television shows and these talk shows, and he seems to have this plethora of scientists around him that are knocking him down. Well, John Oliver decided to get real scientists in his studio, and it was just like, you know, for every scientist out there that's saying, no, global warming is not happening, there's 10 more going, you're insane, of course it is. But we don't get to see that on the media, and that's why I want to go ahead, tell us some more about your class. Do you get a lot of students?
I get a few students. It's not required to graduate, so far it's just been students who really want to learn how to do this stuff.
Okay, and there's two things that need to happen for people to graduate from college now. First of all, they need to be in a service industry. If you want to get your master's degree or bachelor's degree, you should be in service industry, some sort of that, for 6 months, and you should take a class on global warming. But go ahead.
There's actually, it's interesting that you bring up the Bill Nye thing and how the media represents global warming, because that's important information about, it says something about the ownership of media and how ownership interests influence how things get covered. There's actually a really long history of the science of global warming. Back in the mid-1800s, there were scientists who were wondering some important things. Like, one, if the sun heats up the Earth, why doesn't the Earth just keep on heating up? And it was theorized that, you know, the heat radiation escaped from the atmosphere and went back off and radiated off into space. But if that's true, if heat does escape the Earth in the form of heat radiation, then why doesn't it all escape? And why aren't we, you know, just this block of ice in space?
Like Mars.
Right. And so, these discussions were happening in scientific journals for, you know, 150, 175 years, until the 1980s, when scientists like James Hansen started pointing their fingers at specific industries. or rather the CO2 byproduct of certain industries. And those industries all had their politicians who would work for their interests, and so it became a bit of a scrum where you'd have a political talk show featuring debates between climate scientists and economists, or climate scientists and politicians. And science doesn't really translate well to that format because, you know, science is hard, you know.
Hard science?
Well, it's hard to understand in that format without unpacking a whole lot of stuff, and it's hard to persuade people who aren't scientists. But people took sides, which is really weird to me, but not hard to understand because people are born into or they develop politicized identities, and those become sort of an inseparable brick of who you are. And, like, that means I support this brand of politics, so therefore I believe in this and this and this and support this and this and this, and, oh, but not that and that and that. It's, you know, it's a heuristic. It's a shortcut for having to think about individual issues.
Okay, but here's the bottom line. We're all going to die, okay? It's like it doesn't matter if you're a Republican, a Democrat, a Libertarian, a Tea Party, a cheese eater. Wow.
We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune.
We are all going to die. So everybody needs to take off their little Republican, Democratic, and Libertarian teabagging hats. They need to sit down and they need to behave. This sounds like it's an American problem. Because it seems to me that the people, because my Zen Master Ted, okay, my moderator is a Danish citizen. They don't have these issues out there. They're like, okay, let's do something to make, you know, to instead of like take away from our children's futures, let's like try and give them a future that doesn't include, you know, death and starvation and dying in the Sahara.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to that. You know,
we're going to talk about that when we come back from our break, though, because okay. I want to know when the science became so political. You know, let's give that a shot. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, your conscious lifestyle on steroids.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul. Every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Host your show on IOM-FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM-FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Have you bought into the idea that you have to work hard for your money, that business is hard? I will share some dynamic access consciousness tools to get you out of your own way so you can create a business that actually succeeds. Join me, Simone Millicers, on The Joy of Business at 4 p.m. Mondays Eastern.
Conscious media for conscious minds. OM Times.
So we're back. And we were talking about the next question. And the next question essentially is, how did science become so political?
Like I was saying, when you had scientists actually begin to point at specific industries and say, hey, you know, if we keep building smokestacks, if we keep building cars, if we keep making less fuel-efficient cars, we're going to keep putting CO2 in the atmosphere, and that's going to cause us some problems. And the last thing people who are making a lot of money by making by creating CO2 want to hear is that that's going to create problems. And so it became pretty politicized in the way we talked about it and the way we dealt with it.
It became politicized because of money.
Essentially, yes.
Okay, it became politicized because of greed and money. Okay, let's go back to the truth then. We're going to die. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you have, sir, and I'm not talking to you, the sir, the political sir who's out there. It's like, move the cows off of the feedlots, put them into grasslands. The farmers need to start, you know, cooperating with each other. And tell me if I'm right, because, I mean, this is what I read on the internet. Oh, my God. So, please, I mean, I want to go back to what your class teaches and what they put it out there, or what accurate information is being put out there. But essentially, it's like, we're all going to die. I can't put that out there enough. It's like, why are you being so flippant greeting? My grandchildren are not, you know what's going to be here in 100 years? Sand. You know?
Maybe not. We're not exactly sure how bad it could be. It could be the low end estimate is roughly 2 degrees, which would be bad. The high end estimate is around 11 degrees, which would be otherworldly. And deserts and unstable climate and, you know, weather patterns and, the ocean being a vast dead wasteland that's too acidic for anything to live in. That could be bad. We don't know which it's going to be. But because of the uncertainty, I mean, I feel like we should act sooner rather than later.
Well, without a doubt, because we can see what sorts of things are undeniably true. What sorts of things are undeniably true that we can point at and say, this is because of global warming?
Okay, so there are a few things we know. Okay, here's what we know, or what we're really sure of. You know, scientists know with a very high degree of confidence, very great certainty, that human-induced global warming influences physical and biological systems throughout the world. Okay, that means, you know, the oceans, the animals, us, trees, plants, everything. We know beyond a shadow of a doubt that sea levels are rising. We know that glaciers and permafrost are shrinking. We know that methane is escaping from tundra that was frozen. We know that oceans are becoming more acidic. And we know that the ranges of plants and animals and where they live is shifting it's shifting toward the poles.
But how can we actually say, Todd, how can we actually say that this is a result of global warming and not something that Gaia always does? Mother Nature is just doing this thing. The Earth is going to do what she's going to do, and she's going to protect us.
We can measure... We can measure how much solar energy is hitting the Earth each year, and we can compare it to changes in the surface and atmospheric temperatures. In short, the two don't match up. The stuff at the top, where energy is coming into the atmosphere, sort of averages out over time, but temperature down below, within our atmosphere, keeps rising. So we also know that the CO2 released by burning certain fossil fuels has a very distinct chemical signature, like a fingerprint, and the heat the extra additional heat radiation in our atmosphere bears that same signature. We also know that we've, the last 20 years or so have been warmer than the 20th century average for warm temperatures. We know that, the 10 of the hottest years on record have happened, in the last 12 years. That all seems to be pretty convincing.
Okay. That is pretty convincing. But wasn't there like some sort of weird small ice age when George Washington was president too?
There are climate cycles for sure. But generally what we're seeing happening over the last 150 years is a lot faster than is explainable otherwise.
Okay, so I'm still not convinced. When you started creating your class, you know, you probably realized that it was more than just showing people how to find up-to-date and unbiased information. So talk about that. How do we find up-to-date and unbiased information?
There are a number of places you can go. There's no shortcut for doing a whole lot of reading and investigating what different sources say. And what you're looking for is kind of a social consensus, you know, like, or not a social consensus, but rather a consensus among experts who will generally agree on a set of facts. Now, that's not to say they're always that consensus is always right, but keep in mind, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Well, you do realize that I'm part of the Flat Earth Society, right?
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Like one of the things that global warming deniers will do is bring up something that's kind of long been settled science and say, but what about Milankovitch cycles? Game over, global warming scientists.
Like, I don't even know what that is. What are you talking about? John Malkovich? A John Malkovich cycle? What did you just say?
It's like wobbles of the Earth and like different patterns of orbit. And it's like no one's thought to address that in the last 100 years.
Yeah, because you know what, Todd? We're stupid. Okay?
I didn't say that. I think
no, I'm saying it. I'm saying it because what we have here is the dumbing down of the human population because maybe this is part of their plan. Let's just like burn them all up and we'll all live on some island oasis, folks. Huzzah. You know, I mean, seriously, the things that you said, and I know that you're brilliant. All right. I've always known this about you. But
I'm not. I just talk a good game.
Well, and there
so,
you go.
So smart people. And, So I was creating this. I mean, okay, it gets deeper than all of this stuff, you know, than even finding good information. When I started creating the class, I realized it was, like you were saying, more than just showing people how to find what they're looking for. It kept ballooning into all these different areas that I'd not really considered part of my, you know, official job description before. You know, stuff like science and historia, you know, like the scientific method and historiography and sociology and political science and psychology and even a bit of evolutionary biology. It got really trippy really fast in trying to understand why people are resistant to using the best information available. Because you can give people the right information, but there's no guarantee that they're going to receive it or understand it or even use it correctly. So I wanted to design a class that tackled all of those issues. And the first thing you need to talk about is epistemology, okay? Like how we know what we know. And if we're justified in believing the things we believe about the world. So whenever someone says to me, I don't believe in global warming, I say, me neither.
Ha, it's, I like that.
It's like when I press the up button on the elevator to take me up. I don't have to believe it's going to take me up because I understand how it works. It's an epistemological problem that people don't understand the difference between information and facts and knowledge and beliefs and faith. They're all kind of wrapped up together, but they're different. You know, like information doesn't have to be true. It doesn't even have to make sense. Like static on the radio is information. The information is there's not a station here or your radio is broken. Or if I go, you know, that's information.
Uh-huh.
You should do that. Make a weird... See, and it's also about how supposedly...
See, you told me to do that. So you said, do that. Now, do that thing. Use that same kind of magic.
For, these are not the droids you're looking for.
Use that same kind of power to the people who are being so greedy...
But then there's like a fact, and that's something that happened. It's indisputable, or it's not seriously disputable. Like I stubbed my toe this morning, and you could argue that didn't really happen.
Yeah, I was just going to say that didn't really happen. That's not a thing.
Well, no, you could say that everything is happening in some sort of solipsistic dream state of the multiverse in your own head, and I would punch you.
If a bear claps his hands in the woods, does anybody hear it?
But I think as long as we accept that the universe is real as a sort of philosophical brute fact, then we have to concede that things happen. Like, okay, CO2 traps heat radiation. I stubbed my toe. This morning, my youngest son woke me up by dumping a bottle of kefir on me.
You needed a yogurt bath.
I needed a yogurt bath.
That's very organic. Was it? It was. That's very good for you. Well done.
No, I mean, I felt good because I own stock in the company. So
was it in a plastic bottle, and was it recyclable?
It is a recyclable plastic bottle.
Excellent.
So then you move on to belief, all right? And that's like trust that something is real or that it exists. And even though there might not be evidence or a real clear reason why, like, I believe in the flying spaghetti monster.
Which I am a minister of the church of, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
Why does that surprise me? It's because I think it would be neat to be touched by his noodly appendage. Like, I don't have...
I am a pastafarian.
I don't really have justification for thinking that's going to happen. But it'd be neat if it did, so I believe in it. And so...
And that, folks, right there is the basis of all religion. Huzzah!
That's our problem.
Boom!
So the classical definition of knowledge is that it's a justified true belief. All right? It's something that you believe that you're justified in believing. And more than that, it's the way that society assembles facts and makes a sort of agreed upon landscape. And that's a mix of things that are indisputable facts as well as things that we've just sort of agreed to agree upon. And there's a whole bunch of cultural and religious stuff that gets added to that to create this whole tableau of what we think and what we feel and what we believe and
yeah,
know.
Yeah, but we're all going to die.
And
we're going to die these horrific, horrible deaths if we don't start behaving. And by behaving, I think that there are some very simple and logical, reasonable ways to obtain some sense of longevity for our children. Again, I'm going to go back to the cows and the methane, and because the one article that I did read, and I am an idiot because I didn't write it down. Zen Master Ted, you know the article that I'm thinking of and the person that I'm talking about where he said it's the principle of Occam's razor. The simplest answer is usually the most correct. Move the cows off of the feedlots, put them back in fields. Yeah. All right. We're going to talk about that when we get back. Hang in there, Todd. Don't go anywhere.
Oh, well, I was planning.
No, stay.
No, you can't.
Yes. Stay.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network. What if business could be fun? What if business is the adventure of living? What are you choosing? Where do you do business that makes it easier, more fun, or more joyful for you? We'd love to see where you do business. Connect with us on Instagram at @joyofbusiness or Twitter at @joyofbusiness and share your pictures with hashtags businessdoneware and joyofbusiness. Let's change the world with business.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Free your mind. Expand your soul. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Okay, Todd, we're talking about reality now, all right? By the way, thank you, everybody, for listening to the OM Times Radio Network. Todd, do you have, like, a website or anything that you want people to connect with you, or do you just want to be like, just come to my class? Because I know you're a published author.
You can read some of my lecture notes. But it's not a website. It's just, it's a blog that I teach class through. So if you go to WordPress, it's Unofficial Fact Checker, all as one word.
Unofficial Fact Checker. Now, do you want to tell anybody, just before we talk about reality and consensus reality, because we talked about that yesterday, it's really important, but I also want to know, do you want to promote any of your books? That Todd's an excellent writer, people. He really is, and he's so diverse and so varied that, I mean, he's got these incredible books of poetry. He's got these incredible I loved Before You Were a Prophet, by the way, that book.
All right.
I loved it. And I've actually had people, in fact, my eldest son said, when is he ever going to write a sequel? So
that part of my life is over. I'm never going to write a sequel to that book.
Okay.
But tell him to keep the faith, though, because faith is important. It's important to believe in something.
We're going to talk about that in a minute, but
I appreciate that. That is never going to happen. But he could read Jukebox Loser.
Okay.
I've got some other novels that I'm working on. A movie I wrote called Critical Nexus got made. That was cool.
Yeah, you can get that on Amazon too, by the way. I have it in my Amazon store. I'm pretty sure I do. Yeah, I still have not watched it yet. I might have to do that. But let's not waste any more time. Yeah, you're awesome. You're a great writer. Obviously, you've got books out there. People can find you by looking you up online.
Yeah, use the Google. It will guide you well.
Okay, so let's talk about Google. Let's talk about Wikipedia.
So this class sort of balloons into other areas of investigation, like the difference between social consensus and scientific consensus, or between reality and consensus reality. And like right now on Wikipedia, which traffics in consensus reality, there's a really fascinating thing happening about the Haymarket riot. And according to just about every source in the last 130 years or so, it said there are these anarchists and they are convicted of the bombing, and then there is no evidence, without any evidence, connecting them to the bomb. And so there's a professor in that field, a guy named Timothy Messer Cruz, who's researched it and written books and articles, and, you know, he's an expert in it. And then he actually read the trial transcripts, and there was a bunch of evidence, like 6 weeks of it, in fact. But if you try to edit the Wikipedia page to say that, as he has, it'll get changed back, because the vast majority of the sources say the same wrong thing, that there was no evidence. So you have an example of a society constructing knowledge or agreeing to agree upon something that's wrong.
So then we should always opt for, like, reasonable and reliable sources over the scourge of Wikipedia.
Let me clarify that. I think the distinction you're making is between primary and secondary sources. Like a primary source is something of the era under study, like the trial transcript. And then a secondary source is anything written after the fact, like about the primary sources. So say a newspaper article or an encyclopedia entry about the trial. And there are good reasons to use both. Like Wikipedia gets a bad rap, but on any given day, it's as accurate as any other encyclopedia. It's just it can be woefully wrong minute to minute.
Well, my daughter wasn't allowed to. She was doing a research paper in high school, and one of her, I think it was my daughter. It was either my son or my daughter. They weren't allowed to
use it, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are good reasons for that. One is because it can be woefully wrong minute to minute. You know, people will just change it for fun, and if you get it before it gets changed back, that's a problem. Another reason is it's a dynamic web page. It's open to being changed, and if you take.
But you just got through saying that if you try to change it, you can't.
Right, it'll get changed back, but if everyone agrees, if you can cite a source that says yes, it's this, and everyone agrees, then that's what it's changed to. But if you take an exact quote from Wikipedia and then put it in your paper, and then someone comes along and changes the language, and everyone thinks it's great, and your professor goes and looks on that page and doesn't find your quote, he's going to think you just made it up.
So it's basically a good place to start your research, right?
But not a good place to finish it, you know.
Okay.
I recommend, to get the gist of the idea from encyclopedias or Wikipedia or whatever, and then searching for the people or the keywords in the databases to get more reliable sources. And
what databases? So,
but it's kind of a double-edged sword. See, secondary sources usually reflect consensus reality, and the assumption by a lot of people is that primary sources reflect actual reality. But that isn't necessarily the case. Like the whole.
Well, no, because my Bible is actually a better Bible than your Bible, and my Bible was written.
I don't doubt that at all. I think your Bible is magic. My, you know.
I have a magical Bible. No, but okay. So again, here we go. Let's just bring it back. You know, let's bring it back to the reality, to what is really actually happening.
Well, okay. Well, let me. Okay. It's not just reality; it's how it's how we interact with reality through sources. All right. See, like the whole vaccines cause autism thing was started by a bad study by a guy named Andrew Wakefield. And if you read his paper and only that paper, there'd be seemingly cause for concern, but not if you look at the way the other experts in the field announced it, leading eventually to the paper being retracted and his losing his license. I think he lost his license. Wait, can we edit that out? Oh, we're live, aren't we?
We don't know. But it might have been. It was maybe held or something.
But the important thing is a reading of, you know, of the that body of literature would have let you know that his results were an outlier among other people working in that field. And like I said, if you want to make an extraordinary claim, you better have some extraordinary evidence. But here's what's interesting: people will defend that guy seemingly to the death. Any article about him or his work on the internet has a comment section that descends really quickly into outlandishness. Like the longer it goes, the further it gets away from the actual topic of import. And that's kind of like a microcosm of society.
Okay. I was just going to say, let me stop you there because this is a perfect example of not blame. Okay. Blame. Right. This is why I guess your class has to go with psychotherapy, because we all want. I mean, I have friends with children with autism, serious autism, and they're baffled. I mean, these were people who were healthy and they are intelligent, well-bred, educated people who ate well, who did everything right, didn't smoke, didn't drink. Didn't do anything while they were pregnant. And so suddenly what is happening is that they have this child.
Yeah. And I get that. And my heart goes out to that. I mean, you know, and fundamentally all parents want to be good parents and they want to make the best decisions for their kids.
Okay. But see here, stop right there. Fundamentally, all parents want to be good parents and make good decisions for their children. So why can't we do the same thing for the earth? Because what we are looking for is something to blame. It was interesting. This is why we defend. This is why religions will defend. The Muslims will defend their religion. The Christians will defend their religions. But the religion should be our earth. I mean, it's great that you want to believe in Muhammad. It's great that you want to believe in Jesus. It's great that you want to believe. Let's believe in breathing.
You don't have to believe in breathing because you know you've got an epistemological problem, Sarah.
Well, we do have to be wary of confirmation bias.
We like blaming people and we like being right. We like the feeling of being right. We like poking fun of things. And so you start talking about CO2 and pretty sure, you know, CO2 and how it blocks heat radiation. And pretty soon Ann Coulter is calling Al Gore chubby. And there's like a worldwide secret cabal of scientists who are planning to take over the world because liberals or whatever.
No, they have a flake. They have a secret pact to fake global warming so that they can get grant money.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's important, I think, before we even interact with information to know ourselves, like to know our own biases, because we're all products of how we were raised in our culture and our personal politics and even our own innate biologies. And those things play into what information we seek out and how we evaluate it, how much credibility, you know, how much weight we give it and ultimately how we use it. So we have to be wary of things like that, about what we're taking into the information search ourselves.
So how does biology play into this belief?
Well, it's really, there's a social, I'm actually not sure what is title is, but it's a guy named Arthur Lopez at the University of Michigan, and I read some of his writing, and he talks about, okay, the feeling of cognitive dissonance, that's when your mind is like, is like against itself, all right? And the reason we have it is because when, 700,000, 100,000, 500,000 years ago, when we're walking through the jungle, we see something that looks off, and it sets off this fight or flight symptom.
I wasn't walking through the jungle. I was flying.
You freak. But we have this fight or flight response to things that look odd, and that's good because that could have been a tiger or whatever. That meant be prepared to defend yourself or get out of there.
Rawr.
And we have the same sensation when we encounter information that we disagree with, that makes us disagree with ourselves. And so we either turn the channel or we read the headline and say, oh, that sounds like BS and don't read that article. Or we go to another page on the internet or we fight it. We work really, really hard to not agree with it. We come up with like there's a worldwide conspiracy of scientists. I mean, people will work really hard to not understand something they don't want to understand.
Why is that?
Because of why I just said. Stay with me.
I am so with you, brother. It was rhetorical. I was like, why is that? It's like, my God, people, here are the facts.
Okay, let me, why that is. Okay, if I'm evolution and I want to, I'm evolution, nice to meet you.
Hi.
And I want to design a species that's going to last, okay? And so it makes sense that I'm going to make them different, all right? Like, and we have some, archetypally, we have about half the humans are communitarians. Like we think, we live together and we work together and we do things together. And half of us, or thereabouts, are individualists. Are like, no, I don't know, leave me alone. And that makes sense because sometimes you need all of us working together to build a dam or to, to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about that when the music and people quit talking. Ah. I completely forgot.
Wow. Time.
The cutting edge of conscious radio. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, this is Angela Levesque, host of Entanglement Radio. Join me Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern for inspiring conversations with visionaries in spiritual science and conscious healing. Entanglement Radio, Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern. Transcendent talk for the conscious mind.
Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Okay, Todd, we're heading into the great
final stretch.
I want to know how people can become informed and make good decisions.
I think it helps to learn a bit about who you are and what your own biases are going into the research, and then it's important to develop sort of your own framework for evaluating sources as you encounter them. Like things I look for. I look for bias, like purpose, audience, things like that. Like, okay, is there a known bias of this source? Is the language they're using, is it meant to convince me or persuade me of something? Who is this written for? Is it for people who obviously know about the field, or is it for people who are uninformed? Things like that. Is it timely? Is it within the time period that I'm studying? And so I think once you have a consistent framework for evaluating information, that helps you say, okay, well, I agree with this source, but I'm going to hold it to the same standards that I hold other sources to.
Well, earlier we talked about laws that were, there are laws against deliberately distorting the news. Talk about that for just a second.
I'm going to find some exact language for you because I thought this might come up. And let me flip through my notes here. And so the FCC doesn't really, there's not really a law. They have
guidelines.
And I'm going to find that in a second. So I'm going to give you exact. No, I want to be exact.
That's cool. They'll investigate if there's like a clear documented evidence of deliberate bias.
Here we go. Yeah, they'll investigate if there's clear documented evidence of deliberate bias.
Ha. Right? Yeah.
But that's a hard legal standard to meet. And like they'll jump all over obscenity or accidental nudity, like Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl or whatever. Uh-huh. But they take a much less strict approach about news distortion. So their website actually says, I found it, the FCC may issue penalties for knowingly broadcasting false information, end quote. So definitely sanctions for the errant boob, but maybe penalties for distorting the truth. Now, there's some language in their charter about how heinous it is to distort the news, but without clear documented evidence, they won't intervene. They won't fight about it in court. They'll go if it's already a slam dunk case, but they're not going to work to prove it. All right, so the news stations, news owners have a lot of leeway in what they cover, what they cover, what they don't cover, and the frame that they present it within.
Do you feel that there is, with your experience now, how long have you been teaching this class, Todd?
I've only been teaching this class for a couple of years now.
Okay. All right. So do you feel that there is some censorship happening at all? I mean, I don't know if you're comfortable talking about that we haven't even said anything about
Absolutely
that.
Absolutely not. They're going to send their black helicopters for me. There's definitely censorship there. I mean, there's censorship through, when people think of, this is such a complicated issue and we've only got like 8 minutes left.
Only have 3 minutes left.
Oh, no. So yes.
Give him five, Zen Master Ted.
Okay, yes, there is censorship, and people, when they think of censorship, they think of Big Brother and the government, but there's also de facto corporate censorship where ownership interests of news media decide what they're going to cover and what they don't cover, and there's documented evidence of that. But it's also built into the framework of our society and how we perceive things. And like what gets covered and what doesn't get covered,
even in the
public sphere of discourse, Noam Chomsky talked a lot about marginalized thinking and what was acceptable thought within the margins. And I really do feel that plays into information literacy
and censorship.
Because there's government censorship and there's corporate censorship and there's even self-censorship, like what I'm willing to accept and what I'm willing to hear, and also what my culture will let me hear.
Well, as a librarian, it's got to be really terrifying to think that even if you give people good information, they might reject it for reasons that have nothing to do with the stuff that you're trying to teach them.
It is indeed. It's like you're reading my mind. It's one of the scariest things out there, because you can give people good information and they're like, I disagree. Well, no, dude, you don't get your own facts.
But you do, because science is religion.
You're entitled to your own opinion, not your own reality.
I'm a Gnostic scientist.
That's another thing we get into, because like the internet, vast freedom of information, but it's built to let you create your own feedback loop of misinformation, where you can surround yourself completely with things that are wrong.
Oh, that's called religion.
don't do that. Religion.
No, I won't. But, this does seem to have a transform. Does it transform your students?
It has the potential to. I mean, students, you know, I had this really great thing where this student came in. He's like, you know, I don't believe global warming. I said, oh, cool, me neither. But he said, you know, I think it's actually going to be beneficial. I said, well, that's great if you can find good source, you know, credible sources, timely sources, unbiased sources that'll prove that. I'd love to read that paper because I want some good news for my children. And so, you know, he did his work and his study, and he kept finding articles that were not really rising to the level of academic credibility that we needed, and finally came up and said, you know, I'm going to have to give up on this topic because I can't support it. All right, that's amazing. All right, that's what I want. It's like, okay, good. You this works. And so he ended up writing his paper on how businesses could generate social capital by going green. All right, so within the framework of his discipline, he got to write something that was still meaningful to him. But
and not only that, I think it's very meaningful to a lot of people because if we can turn this around for these greedy bastards to make money. You know, because they're like, oh, we can't change anything because we're going to lose money. Well, if we could show them how to make money by going green.
I think you're angrier than I am.
I really could be because I have grandchildren. See, you have two beautiful boys and I have a beautiful granddaughter and a beautiful grandson. And listen, is there just before we head off, is there like a way to bring everything under one umbrella?
No.
A unified field theory of information, way to bring everything under one umbrella.
You just have like, okay, if any subject that you look at is going to have like a landscape of information, you've got, you know, people who are telling the truth and people who are not. You've got, but the important thing to focus on is like the ownership of information, like who owns it, because whoever owns it is, you know, gets to say how it's released, how it's created, what they focus on, you know, and then how is it disseminated? And then you've got to also understand your own self and how your own issues and how you interpret it. So I think the unified theory or the unified field theory is just being aware that information has an owner, it has a creator, it has a disseminator, and it has a receiver, and their information and meaning could be lost in all three of those areas. So I think it's important to take kind of a holistic or global view of that.
I never thought I'd say this before, but I would actually take your class.
Why did you think you would say that before?
Well,
class is awesome.
Because,
I had a student who was like, I learned more about how the world works in this class than any class I've ever taken before.
Yeah, right? And truthfully, I am interested now. This is my testimony because you know what I'm interested in, and it's like it's none of my business what the scientists are doing. Somebody will figure it out, okay?
Right.
I have now decided that this is part of my problem too, and I think
my job is done.
There you go. And I think that you should continue doing this because I'm not just pandering to your ego. I truly mean it. All right. I truly mean it. Like I am now interested in what I can do on a daily basis because I recycle and I pat myself on the back and I do this and I drive a little VW Volkswagen Bug and, you know, when I'm not driving my Chevy Silverado, but ooh, product placement. Anyways.
So you want to know if there's a good list of things you can do.
Yeah, real quickly.
Okay. So, David Suzuki, the environmental activist, says, gives some good suggestions. You know, green your commute. You know, take a bike, take a train. You know, get an energy efficient car. Turn your lights off when you're, you know, all the simple stuff. Turn your lights off when you're not using. Turn your computer off at night when you're. A lot of people leave their computer on all night, but that generates a lot of CO2.
Yeah, really.
Turn your computers off. Wash your clothes in cold water. You know, you can actually, many power companies now, you can actually contact them and ask them, is my electricity, is that coming from a renewable source? And sometimes they have options and you can say, yeah, you know, hook me up
hey,
with renewable power.
You know what?
What?
You're going to write all this stuff down. I'm going to put it on my website so people can pull it up in a PDF because I've got to give a shout out to our sponsor, Alchemy Stones.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I am delighted. We got to get you back. I say this to everybody, but we've got to get you back because I think we're going to get a lot of feedback from this. But Todd, I'm really grateful to you for, you know what? I'm a new believer. I didn't think I would be. I came into this pretty skeptically, but I'm
so
a new believer.
You actually did not think that global warming was happening? Or
no, I knew that it was, but I wasn't interested in it in a way that made it responsible for me. Like, I didn't think there was
anything. That made you responsible for it. Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Like, I'm a little bit more willing to listen to what the scientists are talking about now instead of like, oh my God, this is so over my head. I can't do anything about it. And Gaia's going to take care of us.
Yeah, so. Gaia doesn't care about us, Sarah. I'm sorry.
When she gets all the plastic she needs, she's going to shake
with
us off.
Earth will be fine.
Okay, you got to be quiet.
Civilization is messed up.
Shush. All right,
goodbye.
You got to go. Bye. So get out of here.
All right,
go save the planet.
I'm hanging up. I'm serious. I'm going to do it.
Go save the planet because I got to talk about alchemy stones and Father's Day is coming up. People need to give alchemy. They need to go out and buy one. Is that Master Ted? Yeah, you get your beloved a rock. Next week, we're going to be talking to Motorized Millie. She's going to come on and she's going to give out the Namaste Award. And oh, I'm going to be on Entanglement Radio on Wednesday. Listen to me with Angela Levesque. Entanglement Radio next Wednesday. All right, I'm out of here. I'm going to go save the world too.